Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I'm Danny LaRue, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. And this is going to focus on the Warriors-Lakers game, which was on Saturday, because that was the only game on the weekend that was televised. And for those of you who are interested in what happened in the game against the Nuggets, I recorded after Friday's game with Adam Morris from Denver Stiffs, who was at that game, to get a first-person account since it wasn't on TV. And if you want to listen to that, you should definitely check it out, because I really enjoyed getting an unaffiliated, you know, third party's perspective on the game, and specifically on the Warriors. We did tailor most of it towards them. So because we did that then, going to focus on the Lakers now. And that was a fascinating game for a couple different reasons, but my biggest takeaway was it was the best Stephen Curry has looked physically. His stat line was good, but not mind-blowing. But it was more in the little things. Like, he felt it looked like his shooting stroke was a little bit more comfortable, and just his presence on the floor. He took D'Angelo Russell one-on-one a couple of times. That was notable. And then also, he was more himself defensively, and you could see it in the small things. One that really stuck out to me was he got a steal in a jumbled set that the Lakers were doing. I'm not exactly sure what was going on. And he got the ball and threw it over his head. So he was facing his own basket and threw it towards the basket they were shooting at in their own half. And it went to Kevon Looney, who then drove down, and I believe he got fouled. But that showed an awareness and a looseness that is a trademark of Curry. And there are moments where that is frustrating, because the Oracle turnovers, as they're sometimes dubbed, can be a problem because they let the other team in and things like that. But it can also show that he was comfortable in the situation, and he did that with knowledge. It wasn't a circumstance where you just threw it blind. He knew Looney or somebody was there and would be the first person to get to the ball. So that was notable. And also, maybe he got up a little bit for playing D'Angelo Russell, who is the much-hyped point guard of the future, not only in the Pacific Division, but arguably in the Western Conference as a whole. So Curry sometimes does get up for those matchups. So that was the biggest takeaway from that performance. And then the next biggest one for me was Kevon Looney. And Looney didn't really dominate in any way, shape, or form during the time that he played with the starters, because Draymond Green did not play in Saturday's game. But he looked more comfortable out there than I expected. And that is an important part of his progression in this, is that while he is going to be, ideally, a backup, a low-end rotation player for this year, you need to have somebody who is capable of stepping into a role in case Draymond needs to miss a game or, you know, gets in foul trouble and something like that. And the most logical extension would be to go smaller and use Durant at the four, Iguodala, one of the other guards, because it seems like they have more confidence in those guys. Or maybe you go a little bit bigger and use David West at the four with Zaza or something like that. But what Looney can hopefully bring is a combination of those kind of two different attributes. So his three-point stroke hasn't really been there in the preseason, and that's not a surprise. But he's agile enough defensively that he can do well at the four. I would love to see him play the five eventually, just because that gives you so much more versatility. It goes to the general rule that if a guy can play up a position, you want them to do that, because it gives you more offensive flexibility, because there are more guards and, you know, perimeter players that can handle the ball than frontcourt guys. So that is where it would be better to go, and that's part of the reason why I asked that question about who he thinks he can defend back on Media Day. And that is important in the long run, but his, you know, just ability to hold his own enough against a competent Lakers front line. I mean, certainly not the best front line that the Warriors will face in the regular season, but he did it well enough that if need be, they could handle it. And that's another massive benefit to having the other players the Warriors have, is that you're not asking for a lot, and Looney is a great rebounder, especially on the offensive boards, not just in this game, but broadly. It was one of his true strengths in college and in the limited amount of time we've gotten to see him before that, both in Summer League and just kind of with the Santa Cruz Warriors and in little splashes of time with the Golden State Warriors last year. And so that is an unusual element, especially this year, because the Warriors' best offensive rebounder last season was Festus Ezeli, and he's gone now. So if he can do that, ideally hit some open shots and hustle, it can help be a part of this team. And as he develops, it's the same kind of logic as McCaw, that if he can start at that point where he's a stable, low rotation player, then the hope would be that in a year, or even towards the end of the season, he can take a larger role that will be vacated by one of the other players leaving or aging out of it. So Zaza, David West, McAdoo, whoever that's going to be. And the Warriors are going to need those sorts of players, because that is the way for a team that is capped out, and the only way the Warriors have cap space to use on new players is if Kevin Durant leaves, and that's not really a good option. So they need to maximize what they can get out of all of these guys, and that is going to be a team-building thing, especially as we're starting to get little positive words about the new CBA, and it looks like the structure is going to be pretty much the same, or at least very similar. So those team-building structures for a capped-out team are going to be similar. So they're going to need to scratch and claw and ideally buy more second-round picks and ideally have those second-round picks work out. But Looney can be a significant part of answering some of those big questions. And he might need to be sooner, just because neither really Varejao or McAdoo have particularly impressed during this time. And the expectation, at least my expectation at this point, is that they're both still going to make this team. But not just in terms of box score stats, but just in terms of capability, JaVale McGee outplayed those two in the last few games. And the big question has been now for a couple weeks is he better by enough to justify the change that it would be, especially considering the equity that both McAdoo and Varejao have built with the Warriors and with this coaching staff. And it's another one of those things that it's harder to argue in the abstract. When I went on Warriors Plus Minus with Tim Kawakami and Marcus Thompson, I talked about how if it were solely my decision, that's what I would do. I would take him over, presumably, Anderson Varejao. And Tim mentioned intelligently, he's like, well, you'd have to tell Steve Kerr. And the emotionality of it is impossible to ignore. And it's not like JaVale has been this mind-blowingly dominant player, though he did have his best poster dunk of the season, probably his best poster dunk in 2-3 years in that game. I think it was on Larry Nance. I'm not completely sure. I'm sure somebody will remember. It was not on Zubac, because I saw him out of the frame. And that shows the athleticism he still has. JaVale is also really long. But the bigger point of concern there is not really that JaVale has been dominant. It's that McAdoo and Varejao have not stepped up. And Varejao is probably still dealing with this back issue that kept him out of the Olympics in his home country, and that had to have been devastating to him. And McAdoo has had moments in the past where he looked better, and he did, you know, hit that crazy game icing three against Sacramento at the Shark Tank, but that's an aberration. I think we all know that. And those spots are not going to determine whether the Warriors win a championship or not. They might not even swing too many games, but the Warriors do need to hit on everything that they can. And so Bob Myers and the front office is going to have a challenging decision at this point, especially because keeping that many bigs, at least long term, appears untenable with the patience that they'll probably show in terms of the perimeter players, because you can't keep that shallow pool if you're really going to consider resting guys. And we still haven't seen any of Elliot Williams yet. There are a lot of other ways this could go, depending on what players get cut, because we still have about another week until teams get into the really hard decision. So we've seen players get waived at this point, including the Warriors waiving guys like Elgin Cook, but nobody's moved somebody now that it looks like could be a a player for that last roster spot for the Warriors, somebody even that they would claim off waivers, and Boston is the most likely possibility there, but the person they end up shedding is probably going to be good enough that they'll either get traded or get claimed off waivers by somebody worse than the Warriors. So it is a weird question, and it isn't the most important thing in the world, but it will be a pivotal window into how this front office approaches their decision-making, how they're approaching spending money, because this team is pretty cheap this year, but, you know, I'm not going to say spending $1 million of Joe Lacob and Peter Gruber's dollars is a super easy thing to do, especially if the margin is not that big and there are all these other considerations at play. So that's the more negative part of the center picture. The positive part is that Zaza Pachulia looked better against the Lakers. Still not as what he needs to be in terms of a help defender, but capable offensively. He made his free throws 3 out of 4, which is right in line with his 73% or thereabouts free throw shooting for the year, which is another huge benefit for this team just because it's fundamentally different than Andrew Bogut. And they're going to have to figure out whether Pachulia is good enough to handle that. And it also ties in with the question of whether the Warriors are really going to be gunning in the regular season, because Pachulia has flaws that are exploitable in a sense, but a regular season problem like that isn't that big a deal as long as they are ready to go to the small lineups when it gets playoff time. And that has been a major bone of contention of mine with Steve Kerr over these last couple of years, is that it has been abundantly clear that his best lineups have been with Draymond at center. And having Bogut, who was such a great defender and fit in so many ways with what this team wanted to do, both on and off the court, as a leader, as a defender, as a kind of an identity guy on that end, that he used that as a crutch a little bit and got away from what they did well, and that was to their detriment throughout the finals and at various other moments, especially when Curry was more limited, because getting more spacing gives him more real estate with which to move. And so that is something that will be worth noting, because if it is less obvious or less, let's say, less tenable for Coach Kerr to go to those center-heavy lineups, it could unleash some of the best things. And while the regular season, you know, he said between 12 and 16 minutes for those small lineups, that should be, underlined should, go to 25 or 30, assuming Draymond and Kevin Durant can handle it in the playoffs. And if Pachulia disappoints a little bit and it leads to that, you could probably call that a net benefit. And Pachulia also should get a lot better with time. He looks like he has improved a little bit physically, and David West did not play against the Lakers, but that kind of thing could be noticeable in him as well. When you get these veteran guys who know how long this grind is going to be, it can be beneficial for them, even though they didn't go as long in the playoffs as the Warriors did, to come at this from a little bit more of a gradual perspective. And so I'm not fretting too much about the just general disappointment with those guys, and also Pachulia looked better. So that leaves Patrick McCaw. McCaw and Clark both played reasonably well in this game. He missed a lot of shots early, and one significant observation that I had with him is that while defensively he looked fine in his minutes where he played with more of the starter caliber guys, especially Kevin Durant, offensively he looks more comfortable being a bigger fish in a smaller pond. And I went through his college stats because it was one of those things that when you notice it, it can be true of certain guys, even though it's counterintuitive in some circumstances, because most players are better with smaller usage because they can get better shots. But what stood out looking at his profile at UNLV last year is that McCaw had a very similar assist rate to the nominal point guard on his UNLV teams, and they both started, so this wasn't a circumstance where, you know, one guy was on the floor and one guy wasn't. A lot of times when you have that kind of a circumstance and a guy is a big part of having the ball in his hands in the offense, it can be a major adjustment to get into the other molds. And Klay Thompson is a good example of how sometimes it's better to stay within a lane that you're really good at and grow from there. And that could explain why McCaw, that in substantially weaker competition, has done better in those second unit and third unit roles during the preseason, most notably his explosion at the end of the game against the Nuggets. That said, he looks comfortable out there. He's talked about it with Roz after the game, And defensively, his activity meshes well with the starters. And so, again, it's not something we'll probably see much during the regular season, especially because it has not been established at all that he has outplayed Ian Clark and really moved into that high-end role in the guard rotation. But if that defense can carry over, he should be able to get a spot more reliably on the team, because coaches love guys who can defend and then build off of that. So keep an eye on the idea of McCaw being more of a facilitator. I had not known that much about his game before Summer League, and his passing has been strong. He had a couple of nice plays with Kevon Looney, and I hadn't looked into that, the thing that I said about his assist rate. And so McCaw and Clark together could do a nice job. It was something that I floated in the podcast with Adam on Friday night about, probably more in garbage time than anything else, but giving more shot creation, ball handling responsibilities to Clark and McCaw in those bench lineups. And the answer there probably is to just let them run it in garbage time and see how it works. And it's not a representative sample in any way, shape, or form, but it can be an inkling on whether they have that capability, because if they can do it there, then you can maybe extrapolate. And if they cannot, more importantly, it's a big sign that at this point in their careers, it's not something that they should rely on. And the analogy there could be made to Kent Bazemore, who struggled with less responsibilities on the Warriors, and so the best tack there would have been to give him a different role, though the Warriors didn't have the personnel at that time for it, so they sent him to LA for Steve Blake when they had a more pronounced need for a point guard. But you want to get the most information possible over the course of the season on that, and the Warriors should play enough garbage time to make that really possible. But I want to take a quick moment before getting back into this to hear a word from our sponsor. That McCaw-Clark dynamic might also impact how Kerr wants to use them during the season, because there will be times when they want to use Klay Thompson either fewer minutes or not at all, and Clark is a more natural fit for that role at this point. And if McCaw can handle more shot creation, more ball handling, that could work well as being an active second with on units with Durant or Livingston, maybe not with both. And so having each one of them with a more pronounced niche could work out eventually. And then the hope would be that if McCaw can get a little bit stronger, and again, if it's garbage time, it doesn't really matter, that you can also play them together at the 2 and the 3 rather than the 1 and the 2. And both of those work in non-pressure situations. And if the Warriors are getting into a spot where they need to use Clark and McCaw together in a pressure situation, then things have already gotten bad enough that we don't really need to be talking about it too much. So it will be important to watch how they handle that. But the way that everybody is speaking highly of McCaw, from Steve Kerr, Stephen Curry, all the way on down, shows that they have confidence in him and that he should have a chance to do it. I think it was after the Nuggets game when Kerr said that McCaw was going to have an opportunity to show his value on the team. And in a very small aside, I was watching the open court with coaches over the weekend, which I recommend. I think it's on NBA TV. It might even be on demand. And one of the rule changes that they all advocated for was the idea of letting every player who was healthy enough be active. And that would be something that, so for this year, it's 13 for the league and you can have 15 guys. That would be great for the Warriors, because there will be times when somebody, you know, if they're really, really healthy, that somebody's going to have to sit. And if the Warriors are playing enough garbage time, they would want to have that. It'd probably be an extra center, but having that spot would be good. And they're not going to have that opportunity this year, but maybe next year. So we'll see how all that goes. In kind of before this all ends, I want to take a second to talk about Kevin Durant. He, like Curry, looked a little bit more comfortable in his own skin. He's a phenomenal offensive player. For those of you who didn't listen to it, a week ago today, I did a thing on Kevin Durant as a scorer and went through the different play types on Synergy. And for those of you who enjoy reading it, that will come out as a piece on The Athletic probably by the time you listen to this, but the expectation is it'll come out on Monday, so you can check it out in that form as well and throw in some other information and points of reference. But Durant looked great in this, and even some of the bad shots he took looked good, including the three that he popped with 2 seconds left on the shot clock and turned around, which was a nice little throwback to some of the real highlight Warriors moments of the last couple of years, and his confidence in various offensive situations is a huge advantage, and it's a creative piece that the Warriors have not had in recent years, because as good as Draymond is creating, and he's fantastic and one of the best big men in the entire league at doing that, he's more of a maximizer of opportunities created by other people than he is a creator for himself or others. And there is no shame in that, but what Durant can do with the ball in his hands is meaningfully different. And there were a couple moments in this game, especially because the Lakers' perimeter players other than Deng can be inconsistent defensively, we'll put it that way, that Durant can take advantage of that. And he is a magnificent post-up player. And the post-up part will matter more if Kerr works diligently to get switches. And the reason why a Durant-Curry pick and roll is so devastating is because as long as you're defending them, you know, as long as you don't have Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard, Durant is good enough that switching it becomes perilous. And the reason you want to switch is because that creates the smallest avenue for Curry to get a shot, assuming he's the ball handler in the pick and roll. But if you do that, and then Durant can take the guard out, presumably, because, you know, most teams will have their one on Curry, take them out on a switch, then you can't really think about it in the same way, and that gets into the idea of a third guy and could open up a lot of assist opportunities for Durant. We already saw Klay Thompson have a couple of games where he's just open all the time, and that is another spillover benefit and a huge part of why going 4 and 5 out will matter for the Warriors, because Durant posting up a guard works a lot better when there isn't a limited spacing center out there, because in that circumstance, the big can come over and help. And if the big has to choose between helping and leaving a guy open or sticking on his own cover, then defenses get into some real strained situations, and Durant can take advantage of that whichever way they choose. It's a no-win situation. And the other way that attacking that switch matters is it changes the dynamics for Curry as well. And while it was a problem in the finals when he was limited in terms of his mobility and effectiveness, Curry loves attacking a switch too, so they can use both of them in those circumstances, or even running down screens or trying to force another switch off ball if Curry can get the ball to Durant. And so there can be layers upon layers with this offense, and the creativity, we haven't even really seen it yet in terms of ball and player movement. It might even take, you know, a couple months or even a year or two to unveil all of it, but the special dynamic players that this team has create options that teams have never really had before. And so it's part of why covering this team and watching them regularly will be so exciting, is that they can try things that other teams haven't before. And we haven't, you know, it hasn't happened a whole heck of a lot. Helps when you're playing a team like the Lakers that isn't all the way disciplined on defense yet. They did look more cohesive Saturday under Luke Walton than they have before. So that's a great sign, but they're not all the way there yet. And some of that is personnel. Some of that is just getting all the buy-in and everything that comes with it, because last year was such a disaster for them on that end because there was no accountability. They were playing Kobe, who was vacillated on defense, and a lot of other guys who just didn't really care that much about it and didn't have the accountability because the team wasn't going anywhere. Byron Scott was appeasing them to a degree. So it will be exciting to see what the Lakers can do in the next couple weeks. And they have a lot of talent, and the Warriors will get to see them again on Wednesday. That is their next preseason game. Hopefully we'll have a guest on to talk about that game, because, you know, it's notable in the sense, and playing a team a second time allows you to see different facets of the game, and presumably different Warriors will play in each, so that will also be a test of different fits and everything like that. So was a good experience to kind of see part of the starters with other groups. That helped Looney get an opportunity to show himself in a different way and change the backup rotations a little bit as well because of who was available and who was not. And if you have any feedback on this episode or any of the other ones, you can reach out to me at Danny LaRue on Twitter, DannyLeroux, or DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com. You can also follow my work, those two places, or Danny LaRue on Facebook. I have material coming out a lot of different places over the next few days, and my role in Dunked On will expand over time because, you know, now that we're getting back into the season, we did a little bit in the episode that just came out, kind of newsy, talking about J.R. Smith, talked about the MCW trade and things like that. So if you want to listen to that, you absolutely can. And then also you should check out the Locked On 49ers and Locked On Raiders podcasts. Both teams played on Sunday, and so if you want to listen to that, you should listen all the time, but it's especially good to do that on a Monday after a game because there's a lot of great work that they do going through it, and football is a sport where you can get really engrossed in it, and so I definitely encourage you to check either of those out, or if you're a transplant, whatever other team you care about. So you can definitely do that. If you want to follow Locked On Warriors, you can do that. Locked On Dubs on Twitter, Locked On Warriors on Facebook, and you can email lockedonwarriors@gmail.com if you want to for any reason, for, you know, things to incorporate in the show in the future, or if you're interested in advertising with us, you can reach out there as well, or you can reach out to me personally, whatever's good for you. Take care, and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.